Saddle up your horses.
Well, welcome everyone to Red Sky Radio, Robin Walter Show, part of the Red Sky Radio Network. God bless you. Today, you know, what a different feeling this week than just a week ago. A week ago, I had 4 hours of programming I needed to fit into 56 minutes. It's not that I don't have anything to share today, but it's just a different feel. There is less to share that has to be shared. Yet, in praying about it, God has given me a couple of things that must be shared. And in launching, talking briefly, the good news, starting with some good news and appointments in the Trump administration, I'm not going to get very deep in this today because no doubt most of you have been following this very closely. I don't have anything particular to add to the kudos of the great bulk of appointments, with one exception, that being Musk and Ramaswamy on the good side, and my personal take on why Matt Gaetz withdrew, but more importantly, why Matt Gaetz withdrew as Attorney General, maybe what Trump the Fox did in this situation. All speculation, but that's not going to stop me from sharing it. But beginning with Trump's administration. We've got Doug Burgum, who was in the race for the presidency, went through the primaries, governor of North Dakota. He's been nominated as a Secretary of the Interior. That will obviously pass, and I will say he is a great pick for that position. I hadn't been thinking about him, but he's a great pick. We get to RFK Jr., dealing with Secretary of Health and Human Services. This is a great pick. It really is. You know where I stand on the COVID vaccine and the fact that we got waxed and cajoled and intimidated and deceived and all of the crapola that went along with that. And he was the only person of a national political level, a Democrat, who spoke out against the vaccines, and then against a lot of vaccines, with the evidence coming in enormously. We covered this in a previous program about the absolutely astronomical spike in autism in this country that coincided with the expansion, if not the explosion, of mandatory vaccines in children. There's a lot there. Big pharma needs to go down. Big pharma needs to be small pharma. They stink. I would not own Moderna stock. I would not own Eli Lilly stock. I don't want to be part and parcel of the cabal. I don't want my stock value to go up, which I know it only would, is if they continued to dump out crappy vaccines, which actually are not for our health. We were one of the healthiest countries in the world. Now we are just kind of big and fat and all kinds of problems from over obesity. And I love his slogan, make America healthy again. The left hates him, and I'll tell you why the left hates him and why he doesn't get even much support on Fox. Big Pharma hates him, is afraid of him, going to cut into their big, ill-gotten booty gains and profits that they don't deserve while they're harming America in many respects. This is why, with the possible exception of Newsmax, you're not going to see anybody beating up. I mean, anybody going nice on RFK Jr. The reason being is because Big Pharma covers a significant cost of the advertising dollars for all the alphabet networks, including Fox, even to some extent on Newsmax. How many times can you turn it on, and how many times do you see Duplo Quatsa Katsamika was a new thing and ask your doctor about duplicatsquatsamica. If that's what you, if you think that you're having this or that problem, I thought it was a doctor that was supposed to diagnose the problem, not the person watching some stupid TV ad. Somebody were something designed for somebody as a senior citizen, and who do they show playing badminton or pickleball? Some girl about 32. It's just a racket, no pun intended, speaking of pickleball, but this is a guy, and Donald Trump is absolutely right. Don't let him near oil and gas production or any of that stuff, because there's a whole, he's extremely pro-abortion. He is wrong on so many fronts, but he's right on this front, dealing with vaccines and American health, which I find it interesting. The left hates him, even though the left likes what he says about 90% of the time. Cover all of these appointees, and I'm going to get to Matt Gaetz last. Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence, jury's out on her. Probably okay. I think she made a legitimate. There's a pretty funny comment. I don't know who made it. And it showed a picture of Donald Trump, RFK Jr., Tulsi Gabbard, and, gosh, who was the other one? I can't think of it right now. Well, I don't know. I don't know who it was. Four of them there, but it said all four of these individuals used to be Democrats. That's true. I mean, I forgot the fourth person, but yes, they used to be a Democrat. Oh, Elon Musk, or maybe I said him, Musk, Gabbard, Trump, and that's right, Musk, Gabbard, Trump, and RFK Jr. You go back far enough, Trump was a Democrat. And they've all come to the right. They've all woken up. They all did smell the roses and the coffee, and they came to their senses. So I'm going to give her a pass, because is she qualified? How do I know? Is she for real on the right side? Yes. She came out as an independent from a Democrat in the leftist commie state of Hawaii. So it takes guts just to do what she did. And that's who Trump wants. Wants somebody with guts and somebody, people will be loyal. The best of all is this Department of Government Efficiency with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. Just today, they came out with the news that they are already have believed that taxpayers overpaid the federal government last year by $546 million? No, $546 billion. The U.S. taxpayers overpaid the federal government by over $500 billion. And why? Because the IRS code is now 17,000 pages long. And they said this needs to be whacked and simplified like you can't believe. And this is just one more example of Trump hasn't even taken office and somebody says something, or people are looking at who the appointee is and then listening to a comment and then seeing the reaction, because guess what? H&R Block tax preparation software and Intuit's TurboTax both took a hit in the stock market, a big hit, just by the announcing of the fact that Americans are paying gazillions more than they should pay simply because of complication, and that the tax code needs to be radically and drastically streamlined, all of which means you won't have to go to H&R Block or whoever, and they're going to make it then available to be free tax software on a federal website, which there already is, but it's limited in its capacity. Those are two great picks. I love the Department of Government Efficiency. Their job is to work themselves out of a job, just like the appointee for, what's her name now? I can't think of her name. For the Department of Education. A big fan of vouchers. a big fan of busting the chops of the Department of Education. She's got a job, and her job is to work herself out of a job. Gosh, I wish I could think of her name. McDonald, I think it is. Anyway, okay, Pete Hegseth, Defense Secretary, great pick. There's some others here I can't speak to, so I won't even spend time on them. I love the idea of Mike Huckabee going to Israel and get off all this advertising from which he's made millions, but whatever. Marco Rubio, he's probably an appropriate Secretary of State. Kristi Noem, Homeland Security Secretary. I'm going to assume that she's qualified. I'm guessing she is. Elise Stefanik, Ambassador to the UN. Great pick. Tom Homan, Border Czar. Fantastic pick. Lee Zeldin, head up the EPA. Another great pick. And Susie Wiles as Chief of Staff. I don't really know her, other than all I can say is that she is she's reputed to be really, really good. So Trump wants people who are loyal, smart, and gutsy. He wants guts. He wants D.C. to shake, rattle, and roll. He wants to have a shiver me timbers moment in all of the federal agencies, shutting some of them down. Huge, huge plunge in Washington, D.C. home prices, I hope. Gut the market. Just gut it. Too bad, so sad. The federal government blew it up. They can deal with it. Get rid of all of these departments, which we do not need, and all they do is ever vote Democrat. Oh, that's all they do. Now, a couple of things here. I'm going to jump back here to Ramaswamy, Musk, and then Gates. So I love this pick of Musk and Ramaswamy. However, and this is a big however, you can join the Department of Government Efficiency, and they're taking resumes. And it's too demanding. There is a scripture passage that says, biblical, the workman's worthy of his wages. What they're looking for is somebody willing to commit 80 hours a week. 80. Be super intelligent and work for no pay. I mean, that's not biblical. So they're going to have to lighten up on that, and maybe they're, I don't know. I just kind of don't like that. I mean, 80 hours a week is, if you work 7 days a week, which you have no business doing, you're still working from 7 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., 7 days a week, no family life, lots of divorces. How do you pay? You can only really wealthy people apply for this, and out of the positions, out of the applicants, they only want super highly intelligent people. It just said, and they said here, quote, we're very grateful to the thousands of Americans who have expressed interest in helping us at DOGE. We don't need more part-time idea generators. We need super high IQ government revolutionaries. I'm good there. Willing to work 80 or more hours per week on unglamorous cost cutting. If that's you, give us your curriculum vitae to Elon and Vivek, and we will consider taking, out of all these super intelligent people that apply, the top 1%. All of that I am thrilled about, but no pay in 80 hours a week is unrealistic. And it's not biblical. Ramaswamy stated, this all stands in contrast to the many government bureaucrats who, A, do little or no work, B, tell people only what they want to hear, and C, make more money than the value that they create. And this, they said there are going to be significant spending cuts. That's going to be that people can expect huge spending cuts. And, you know, I mean, Ramaswamy doesn't need any money. Musk doesn't need a paycheck. I'm just wondering about the other people. I mean, I'm not super intelligent. So even if I'm reasonably intelligent, am I going to make the top 1%? No, I don't know. I don't think so. But I don't want to spend 80-plus hours a week at no pay. And we're in D.C. or where? Not that I would do it. I want to help out this administration. But as I said, the workman is worthy of his wages. They've gone from people who are bloated bureaucracies, fat cats with way too much pay and perks and benefits, and they can't get off their derriere to do much. Though the answer is not to swing 180 degrees the other way. It's get back to paying the person for the value of their labor. There are $6.5 trillion of government spending each year. $6.5 trillion. And they say they're out to liberate the economy, make the U.S. government accountable to we the people. Musk stated on X that all DOGE actions will be posted online to provide maximum transparency. That will include creation of a leaderboard showcasing the most insanely dumb spending of your tax dollars. And it goes on, and Trump said this initiative, this is interesting. I think this is a very accurate assessment. He called this the Manhattan Project of our time. Now, for those of you, I mean, I wasn't around for the nuclear bombs in Hiroshima, Nagasaki. But that was the Manhattan Project, the development of the atomic bomb. And secret, but life-changing, world-changing, clearly that. And that's what he says. This is the Manhattan Project. This is going to be a life-changing thing for the United States. And what if we end up taking our budget deficit from 35 trillion to 30 to 25 to 20, 15? What happens if we actually determine that we need to live within our means? Yep. It says here that the DOGE will work with the Office of Management and Budget and is set to complete its work by July 4th, 2026, which will mark America's 250th birthday. In other words, it's like the second American Revolution, the second liberation of old glory. They said either we get government efficient or government goes bankrupt. That's absolutely, totally correct. Because everybody listening to me today, to balance the federal budget, to get out of debt, every one of us now would have to write a check. And this covers children down to ones that were born 8 minutes ago. Their share of the government debt is just over $100,000 per person. $35 trillion, 350 million people. Do the math. Divide $35 trillion by 350 million, you get $100,000 per person. We can't survive that. So what Musk and Ramaswamy are doing are arguably, may well be one of the most valuable things Trump will have ever brought to this second term. Yeah, the DOJ is important. Department of Education shut that sucker down. That's hugely important. But one of the only ways you can balance a budget and get the deficit down is to cut spending. So you don't have to go in and hammer and eliminate departments as such. You can just go in and cut the funding. And the departments will start to shrink and then evaporate. And we balance the budget. And then we actually have a higher economic status as a result of eliminating all the wasteful government spending, people having lower taxes. Oh, boy. Sounds pretty good. You see why actually this Department of Government Efficiency may be the tool for reining in all the rogue agencies simply through taking them off at the at their knees, taking them off at their financial knees with a rusty knife. Matt Gaetz. Okay, here's my theory. Then we're going to move along. There was some thought, I shared it last week, that maybe Matt Gaetz, though he seemed like the kind of guy that you would want, just a slash-and-burn guy at the DOJ. But like I said, the DOJ could be dealt with enormous and fabulous budget cuts where they're forced to downsize themselves. They got to self-deport out of D.C. It can be done with a budget. Hacking, if you will. But why did Trump pick him? Well, he's loyal to Trump, but is he more loyal to Trump than he is to himself? I don't know. I don't know the guy. I don't know what's in this ethics report. But I think he has kind of smelled the coffee here, realized that whatever's in the ethics report is probably going to come out. And if it comes out, he probably is toast. And if he's toast, he's toast for everything at that point, if what's in the ethics report is what some people think that it is. Then he's done. He really is done. And I was wondering, I was curious about the fact that he resigned from the House of Representatives so quickly after Trump nominated him. Well, when you leave the House of Representatives, the ethics investigation stops. I mean, the purpose of the ethics investigation is to either censure you or basically boot you out of the House. And if you've left voluntarily, neither of those functions fit. Purpose accomplished. He's quiet. He's gone. We don't have a job to do, so why should we turn this over? So he got out of Dodge at a time where he thought by getting out of the House, he could then keep the ethics report secret, and it may well be by having resigned from this post or as a nominee. Now, why might Trump be just a bit of a fox here? Gaetz can be a bit rogue. I like him. But he is a firebrand, which is necessary, but firebrands sometimes start brush fires. And if Trump didn't want, just think about this a second. If Trump actually didn't want Gaetz as Secretary of the DOJ, and maybe he was going to throw him out there to make it easier to pass some of the other ones, which is the idea that I floated last week, and it wasn't original with me, but I agreed with that possibility. It might be that Trump actually also wants Gaetz out of the House of Representatives. And this got him out of the House, where he could go rogue against Mike Johnson. But now he's between a rock and a hard place, and he's going to get crushed. He can't go back to the House. He can't withdraw his resignation and go back. He's resigned. He's done. But now being possibly exposed at the federal level, he doesn't want that embarrassment. And maybe that wasn't really the pick that Trump had in mind. I don't know. I don't know if Trump is just this smart, this cagey, if he's a riverboat gambler. I don't know. I can't say. All right. This next story, you're going to wonder, why on earth am I covering this? But wait till you get to the end of this absurd story to hear this conclusion. Because in Colorado, which is screwed up, totally, royally screwed up, the Supreme Court is going to hear a case whether elephants can sue the zoo. I'm not kidding. That whether they somehow, through spokespeople, have the ability, the elephant, the animal, to file a lawsuit. This seems so utterly ridiculous. And the organization that's floating this, it's some animal rights organization, of course, but they're identifying the elephants as non-human persons. That's how they're trying to get status to be able to sue. A non-human person. Well, I don't know how this case is going to come out. Being Colorado, it's so stinking screwed up. It's just about as bad as California. But I want you to consider something here. If for some reason elephants get a right to sue as a non-human person, do you know what that opens up? Now, I'm not hearing anybody talk about this. This just came to me. I was reading this, I thought, I don't want it. This is stupid. And then a light went on. Do you know who would be able to then sue? Would be unborn children. Now, they're human. They're not even non-human. But you couldn't make a case for elephants suing as non-human persons and say that children in the womb are not human, persons or otherwise. You can't get person status as an elephant when you couldn't get person status as a human being in the womb. I mean, I looked at this and I thought, oh my gosh, this could actually open up the right of a child in the womb to then be able to sue for the right to live, the right to life. That their right to live trumps a woman's supposed right to kill the child. Think about that. I don't know if you want to weigh in on it. You shoot me an email, redskyradio777@gmail.com. Something else that's a little bit different here, but I've meant to cover this some time back. And I just, you know, there's just some things just kept jumping up in the way. And that deals with the 501c3 status of our churches. You know, I'm sort of enjoying the opportunity to step away from everything so intensely political that I need a break. You need a break. A lot of us do. There are other things that need to be discussed that are important. Now, I was an interim pastor of a church in California, practiced law Monday through Friday, did the radio program on Saturday, preached a sermon on Sunday, went back to work on Monday. Well, I never really quit work. The church was a 501c3, but not because we ever applied for it. I wouldn't apply for it. But I had to apply for status under the state of California. They had to pass judgment on whether you were a legitimate church. Everybody listening out here who is either a pastor, an associate pastor, a deacon, an elder, a member of a church, anybody who's thinking about being a member of a church, anybody who's ever been to a church, anybody who knows what a church is, listen up. You do not have to be a 501c3 organization via the filing with the IRS department to have that. I'm a tax, among other things, I do tax law. My second law degree is in tax law. The code says a church is a 501c3 by being a church. That's all. You don't need to go file all of the forms, tell the church about how much income you're going to be taking in, who are going to be the deacons and the elders, all of that garbage to get approved, when by just being a church, you are already approved. It's the one exception in the whole tax code that you are tax exempt without applying for tax exempt status. Now, why is that important? Well, I guess we're not going to know here for about 2 minutes. Don't go away. This is Robin Walder with the Robin Walder Show on Red Sky Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Robin Walder Show is a listener-supported program. Your contribution goes to help as many people as possible to hear that the Word of God has answers to help you survive and even thrive in the dark days ahead in this country. We pledge to bring you the critical information you need to make informed decisions in this age where big tech and big media have conspired to rid our country of everything Christian. Please send your support to Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. That's Red Sky Radio, P.O. Box 99, Wickenburg, Arizona, 85358. Thank you.
We are back. I am sorry. I apologize. I played that a little too loudly. I do apologize. But I love it. There are certain songs, you know, my generation, by what I play here for music, that there are just intros to certain songs that so define the song. They are so good. Whether it's beginning to Proud Mary, or this one to China Grove by the Doobie Brothers, or whether it's beginning to Honky Tonk Women. Oh, my gosh. I could go on, and I'm not going to. That's not what this program is about. Though I graduated from high school always wanting to be a disc jockey, that's not what this program is about. So anyway, so why would you not want to file this with the IRS? Well, let me start with why people do. Actually, two reasons. Number one, the churches are ignorant. They think they have to. They didn't go to a tax lawyer or a CPA. They just said, you know what? You don't have to do this. You're already a church. You don't have to do this. So a lot of times it's done out of ignorance. The 1023 is a long application to get 501c3 status with a lot of backup paperwork that's necessary. I've done them. I've done them for clients. They wanted it. On the other hand, there are those organizations which want to do business with a parachurch organization or a church, and they want to see evidence that the IRS has given them 501c3 status, or it could be some big donor. Somebody wants to, you know, flop down a big honking wad of money, but they want to make sure that they're going to get their tax deduction, so they want to see it. But it's not really necessary, not necessary at all. And the fact of the matter is, every year when you have to file as a certain size reports, the IRS knows this and they know that. And I know you're probably thinking this is a non-issue with Trump having been elected. But this is why it's not a non-issue. Because the day will come, a very short time down the road, when he's done. Is J.D. Vance going to replace him? I don't know. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. And who's that? The fact of the matter is this area of the law has only gotten more suspect by the operation of the Internal Revenue Service. And I will tell you, one of the concerns, I'm thrilled with these picks. Don't get me wrong, Trump's picks that he's making are thrilled. But the more damage we can do to the left, the more damage the left will be vowed and determined to do if and when they get back in office. Brendan, any question about it? It will be payback time from the left, and we could vault into the worst and darkest days of this republic. So anyway, churches don't have to do it, but this is the biggest problem of all with a 501c3 status. It causes pastors to shut up and close their mouth because they think that if they say anything, they're going to get audited and lose their tax-exempt status. Well, you see, if you don't file for 501c3 status and you're just a church, you don't have any reports to file to begin with. The IRS says, we don't even have record of that church. If you haven't, you know, if you haven't filed for that status. I mean, the American church really, truly should be should it be political? Should it be apolitical? Well, the fact of the matter is Jesus addressed all sorts of political topics, just like I do on this program and just like I do on Sunday morning with Robin Walter. You can't separate politics from everything. Politically affects the world and realm of faith and religion, and everything in faith affects politics. And it affects politics, guess what? In the way that people, Christians, are so stinking scared to speak up because they're afraid they're going to lose maybe their tax exempt status, they're going to lose their job, they want to be outed, they just shut up. So do you think what's happening in the spiritual world affects the political world? Yes. More correctly stated, it's what's not happening in the spiritual world that affects the political world. Not speaking out on behalf of candidates and propositions, and not getting registered and vote, and not getting other people to vote. Has absolutely strong relationship and connection with the political world and what we get. I mean, goodness in, goodness out. But if there's no goodness going in, look, nature abhors a vacuum, and so does politics. And when Christians pull out, something's going to fill it. You know who is and you know what is. And it was, I think her name is Candace Cameron Bure. That name probably rings a bell with a lot of you. I never watched, it was some, I don't know, some family show, sitcom. I understand it was pretty good. Never saw it once. I think she was on The View for a while as the lone conservative. I don't watch The View, so I never saw her there. But she came out and said, she said, the problem here we've had here is that the Christians have simply been too afraid to speak up and to speak out. Now, mark that comment, because I'm going to return to it at the end of the program here. Because there's a heresy involving this 501c3 designation. It's caused destruction. It says that the American church should not be political. It should stay completely out of the public square and not say a doggone thing. And we got a lot of gutless, puny pastors that don't say anything. I know of a couple of great pastors, one in Michigan and one in California. And they probably hear in this program, they know who I'm talking about, that will say what needs to be said. But I also know personally pastors who are frankly eunuchs in clerical robes. They never touched on how bad this administration was and the evil. They just want to stay way away from it, about preaching grace for the 49th time out of the last 52 weeks. Grace, I love it. It's how we get saved, by faith through grace. But not every, come on, wake up. And now this Candace Cameron Bure is saying, you know, this is great. We can come out again, because Christians weren't saying anything. But it seems like the church has considered tax-exempt status to be prized over and above speaking the truth. In other words, let's be tax-exempt. Forget that salt and light business, and we'll forget all the sin in this country, from abortion to queer sex to trannyism, gender mutilation. You go right on down the line. No, we don't dare to touch any of that, because maybe it'll be deemed too political. Well, first of all, the only thing that the law says is that you can't advocate for or against a candidate, not issues. So what the left tries to do, if you come out and say you preach hard against abortion and queer sex and all of this stuff, they'll say you're supporting Trump. We've got to take away your tax exempt status. You've never mentioned Trump, but they can identify all of those sins with their own candidate, Kamala Harris. She's the one who supports and prizes everything out of the pit of hell. But if you advocate against that or for righteousness in the pulpit, they say, well, you must be for the other candidate, and you can't speak out on behalf of that other candidate. That's what they did with the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. They're going after him. But let me ask you, go to your Bible, open up the concordance in the back, go to the I section, scan down it until you get to the Internal Revenue Code, and tell me which chapters in the Bible the Internal Revenue Code and or the T section, tax exempt status, is located. Obviously, I'm being facetious. You're not going to find it. But if we don't have the guts to speak up, things aren't even that bad. Yeah, we're kind of get hammered from all directions, but there's nobody going to a gulag. There's nobody being executed. Yeah, a few people unfairly go to jail. They get to testify before the judge, the bailiff, and a jury, and the prosecutors. Well, oh boy. Here's a quote here from a guy by the name of George Bailey, not from It's a Wonderful Life. That is his real name. He said, for the first time in American history, churches after the so-called Johnson Amendment, where you couldn't speak out before or against a candidate, began to pull back. For the first time in American history, churches began to pull back politically, choosing money over truth and the heretical, oh, we don't talk about politics here, church was born. And I'll tell you, if some pastor told me walking and visiting, said, well, we won't talk about politics here. And I said, then you better strip off that garb and I will get a bullhorn and shout to everybody, flee this place because you got a eunuch in charge here. There are biblical things to talk about. The fact that somebody could sit through church services and never come away with an idea as to who is the more righteous candidate. Trump wasn't perfect. But the more righteous candidate, and who is pure, unadulterated evil, not one tinge of righteousness inflecting or infecting any of her veins or bones. And they want to be salt and light. How many times does Jesus call the rulers, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, hypocrites? All the time. Tell Herod, that old fox. Jesus is the one that decided to rearrange the furniture in the temple. Look, you don't do what God said. John the Baptist called out Herod, not just for marrying his brother Philip's wife Herodias, but it says in the book of Luke, for all the evils Herod did. And Jesus called John the Baptist the greatest prophet that ever lived. So George Bailey goes on to say here, soon many compromised churches and nonprofit organizations across the country began priding themselves on their skillfulness at avoiding political and cultural issues. This fine art of apolitical moral piety has spread to the majority of American churches and Christian organizations. No longer is a church the moral gyroscope of the nation that God intended. But instead, pastors and churches have chosen to hide behind their, quote, we just talk about Jesus, end quote, religious rhetoric, and let the country literally go to hell. Nowhere in Scripture is the church commanded to be silent on moral or political issues. Yeah. Boy, you're going to see here in a minute why I'm spending the time on this, because it is really, truly important. Finishing George Bailey's last words here, the chilling effect on free speech in the American church has been profound and breathtaking. Its progeny, this 501c3 heresy, has transformed the once vibrant and powerful American church into a mostly fearful, greedy, and misguided band of heretics that have lost their saltiness. And as Jesus states in Luke 14:34, are not even fit for the dung heap. So if the pastor is not going to go into this, then you need to get out. Because the left will return here. They're going to at some point. They just, it's in their DNA. They're evil. They're from the pit of hell. And they're going to crush it. You know, as an interim pastor, I was there during Barack Obama's first inauguration, his second inauguration. Not once did I ever shirk from what I felt was my obligation to tell that congregation that there should be no vote for Barack Hussein Obama. We knew he lied about queer marriage when he said he didn't really support it. He really did. We all know that was having queer affairs with Larry What's-His-Face in Chicago. Pro-abortion, like you can't believe until Joe Biden came along, and then Harris. Every succeeding Democrat is more pro-abortion than the previous one. But he was evil. And I told the congregation that, and I preached a sermon out of 1 Samuel 8 to prove just how evil he was. Take away the tax-exempt status, have at it. I didn't need the church for my salary. Church didn't have to stay around for me to do what I was doing. I was going to preach what I was going to preach, tax-exempt status or not. And frankly, if people are only giving money because they get a tax deduction, those aren't the cheerful givers. Those are the fearful givers. God loves the cheerful givers. And so, where does that lead us to? All right, hope you're ready for this. This is a conclusion. I'm going to skip this other story here because I'm going to run out of time otherwise. Candace Cameron Bure, as I said, made this comment about Christians were too fearful. They were too afraid to talk. Afraid of what? Because the neighbor on the left and the neighbor of right had some stupid Harrison Walls sign? Why don't you challenge a neighbor? Why don't you get into a nice discussion, but let them know that you couldn't conceive of a more unqualified, immoral, ungodly, and wicked and evil candidates than those two morons. You choose your own words. I'm just giving you suggestions. But you got to speak it. You're going to win some people over. You'll offend some people. And guess what? That's exactly what happened with Jesus. He won some over, and he offended a ton of them. For what? Speaking the truth. He said, do you think I came to spread the truth? No. It says in Luke, I think chapter 11. He's not the unity candidate. He said, I came to bring division. And what was that? Father against son, mother against daughter, father-in-law against son-in-law, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law. And what was that division? The division is truth. Truth always divides. It does. But if you want to stay in the middle to try to be accepted, I'll tell you, we haven't seen anything yet. And when the left returns, it's going to return with a vengeance. So I want to share something from history with you. And please listen up because this is important. There's a lot of us that have failed in this last year in speaking out. I have a lot of failures, not in this area. Talk to my wife, she'll tell you where I failed. Get your calculator out. But this isn't one of them. That's why I do this program. And if I get yanked off the air, kicked off the air, I've had a station in Las Vegas tell me that they didn't want me on the air anymore if I'm going to talk like this. So what? I'll go on to somebody who's wants and needs to hear this. It's like, Paul said, all right, you Jews, you deem yourself unworthy of this gospel salvation. I'll take it to the Gentiles. I'll go to somebody who wants to hear it. But there are many here that have fallen. They've had a chance to fight and got weak, kind of got wussy, didn't dare to say this or that, fearful of this and that. Goodness sakes, we ain't seen nothing yet. But it reminds me of something that happened back in A.D. 241. There was a man by the name of Trajanus Decius, the Roman emperor. And he adopted this phrase, deliver us, Lord Jupiter. He got that from the Goths. who had sacked Rome just a year after this imperial edict, which required of Roman subjects forced submission and sacrifice to Roman gods. That was a requirement. Some people were imprisoned, some got sued, some got beaten, some got tortured, some got killed for not stating, "Deliver us, Lord Jupiter," and then offering up submission, oblation, and sacrifices to the Roman gods. If you did do it, if you were a good doobie who turned on the Lord, but you were a good doobie to Rome, you got a certificate. How about that? That's right. Participation trophy. You got a certificate of compliance, which I should add that this happened to be the time where it is reported that there were some of the very earliest forgeries in all of mankind of documents. Understanding that there wasn't writing for a lot of years, and there's some places in this world that still don't have an alphabet, don't write, but if you complied, you were the good Roman doobie, you got the certificate of compliance, the persecution would end for you. But then the persecution ended for the Christians. Just sort of like Candace Cameron Bure were saying, "Oh, we were afraid, but now we can come out. We can talk again. It's safe to say this and do this. We've been released. We can speak again about our faith and all of this and that." And that persecution ended then, if you want to call this persecution, which really it really isn't, but lead up to persecution, it's ended now. But the big issue was, and the church at that time, was whether to receive back into the church and into the communion of the body of Christ those who sold out, the ones who, they were a sellout, and decided to worship, at least in their face, foreign gods, and promise allegiance and worship to Lord Jupiter. Were they be allowed back in fellowship? And there's a lot by those who survived, those who didn't cave, but survived. The question in those churches were, these people flew the coop. They didn't say anything. They bailed. And now they want to come back into the church and be just all kumbaya time. Do we let them back in? And the churches, some of the churches, they couldn't decide how to deal with it. They said, "Well, maybe they'll be saved when they're dead. But for those who forged, well, maybe there's some sort of penancy." Because they didn't really give in to the Roman gods and Trajanus Decius. They lied, they cheated, but they didn't really give in. So maybe if they could do some penance or amnesty, then the conclusion was, well, maybe they will go to heaven. Maybe some churches will let them back in. Some wanted to grant them the amnesty. Let them go. Give them a second chance. And you know, they got a second chance because the persecution having ended and the people could come out from the rocks, the caves, behind the trees. They got their chance about 6 years later when a Roman ruler worse than Trajanus Decius returned to the persecution of those who wouldn't worship the Roman gods and took it up another notch or two. Now it wasn't just arrest. It was more like death and torture. And yes, those who failed the first time around got a second chance. They got a second chance to prove that they love the Lord more than they love their life. Whoever gives, what's that? If you love your life, you know, you're going to lose it. But you're willing to lose your life, you'll find it, as Jesus said. So the fact here is, as it applies to the United States, those of you, and you know who we are. And I'm not trying to beat up on you. I'm just trying to give you a warning here. Who bailed and failed when you needed to speak up for fear. It's all fear-based. You may well have a second chance to get it right. Because at some point, unless you pass away in a relatively short period of time, there's a very good chance that the left will return with a vengeance that's worse, sort of like the subsequent Roman leader was worse than Trajanus Decius. And these people got a chance, a second chance. Some failed again, but some paid the price. They realized, this time we got to get it right. Realizing that passage that says, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of the saints. Some got it right. Be sure and get it right when the left comes back around to a town near you. God bless you. Sit tall in the saddle, America. Remember, you ride for the brand of Jesus Christ. See you next week.